Welcome, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of The Law of Self-Defense. I am, of course, attorney Andrew Branca for The Law of Self-Defense, and we continue with our coverage of the Courtney Clenny OnlyFans murder trial of Christian. I always struggle with the last name. Obomseli. This is the rather petite OnlyFans model who managed to kill her boyfriend with a knife in her apartment. She's claiming self-defense. The state of Florida, where this occurred in Miami, disagrees, and they're prosecuting her for second-degree malice murder. She claims that she is the victim of domestic violence, that Obomseli was the abuser, and she killed him in self-defense. The state of Florida takes the opposite perspective. They believe that Courtney Clenny was the abuser in a domestic violence relationship, and that Obomseli was the victim of her abuse and ultimately the victim of her unlawful deadly force knife attack. Now, this Arthur hearing, the purpose of this is to determine whether or not she's eligible for pretrial release. Now, this is this occurred in November of 2022. So this is a long past event. And spoiler, pretrial release was denied by the judge here. The judge being Judge Laura Sheeran Cruz. But the way an Arthur hearing functions is like a mini trial. So we hear from some important witnesses called by the state, and the state has the burden of proof to show by a great presumption that the defendant is likely guilty of the crime and therefore ought not get pretrial release. So it's kind of a mini trial before the trial. And I think it's very useful for us to hear the testimony of these important witnesses, particularly the lead detective who we'll be hearing from again today. And we heard from yesterday. Yesterday, he was on direct examination by the state. Today, we'll hear him on cross-examination by defense counsel Frank Prieto to hear what these witnesses have to say in their testimony, because this is likely what they'll be saying at trial. So it gives us kind of a sneak peek into what we can expect at trial. We'll also hear from the medical examiner in this case. Those will be in following shows. But today we have the lead detective, Borsino, being subject to cross-examination by defense counsel Frank Prieto. So let me pull that up. It's about an hour and a half, but I'm going to speed it up 1.25 speed, and I'll put the closed captioning on as well. So here's Judge Cruz, and I'll go ahead and start things up. Oh, before I do, key followings from yesterday's direct examination of Detective Borsino, just to put all this in context. So there's no jury here, by the way. Of course, this is a pretrial hearing, so they're arguing to the judge. The judge is the finder of fact on this question of pretrial release. And she's seen all the evidence. She has all the exhibits. So sometimes they'll just refer to judge to Exhibit 10 or Exhibit 12 without actually showing it on the screen here. Normally, of course, during the trial, you'd have a jury and you'd need to show that evidence to the jury as it came up. But that's kind of a step that's skipped here. Yesterday, Detective Borsino essentially testified to a lengthy history of abuse by Courtney Clenny against Obomseli. This stabbing death of him was not the first time she stabbed him. The last time she put him in the hospital and he lost a lot of blood. She's also either had a warrant or was convicted of some kind of assault or battery charge for throwing a water bottle at him when they were on vacation in Las Vegas one time. There's the video of the elevator fight, which I embedded in yesterday's show, where she's committing battery on him in an elevator and he's just defending himself. There's since been other video released where she's going on rants, violent rants against him. So it suggests a pattern of domestic violence behavior by Courtney Clenny, emotionally uncontrolled, violent. And it's always that same direction. Now, most domestic abuse tends to be both ways. Two abusive people find each other and partner up and just abuse each other. This, however, all the evidence points to only Courtney Clenny being the violent abuser and Obomseli always trying to placate matters, calm the waters, merely defending himself. And of course, he ends up dead. in the course of this relationship. So that's largely what we heard yesterday. In case you didn't hear it, I do, of course, encourage you to go back and hear it. So let's start now with the cross-examination of Detective Brasino by defense counsel Frank Prieto. Oh, good heavens. Before I do that, I do, of course, have to mention the sponsor of today's show, which is none other than Law of Self-Defense itself. Twice a year, I conduct a full-day Law of Self-Defense advanced class online, streamed to you at your computer, taught live by me. It is a full-day course that teaches you everything you need to know to be hard to convict if you're ever compelled to use force in defense of yourself, your family, your property. It teaches you how the court system actually deals and evaluates cases of self-defense, what the system looks like, looks for when it's deciding whether or not to bring a claimed act of self-defense to trial. We talk, of course, about the five elements of self-defense and how they're typically screwed up by a defender. We talk about defense of others, defense of property. We spend almost an hour talking about how to interact with the police in the aftermath of a use of force event and much, much more. We only teach this twice a year, and the next one is coming up on Saturday, April 20th, 2024. If you miss this course, folks, if you miss this class, it'll be at least October before you have another opportunity. And we're still in the early registration period. So if you sign up now, you get up to 50% off the normal registration. When are you going to be attacked? Do you know? Do you get to choose that? Are you confident you'll be able to wait until October before you know how to lawfully defend yourself? Minimize your risk of prosecution, conviction, life in prison to as close to zero as possible. Don't miss this April 20th date, folks. And by the way, if you can't make that particular Saturday, I would encourage you to register anyway, because every registered student will also get at least 2 weeks access to the recorded playback of that Saturday class. So if you can't make it Saturday because you have a conflict, you'll have a couple weeks in which you can watch the recorded playback of the class at your leisure. Learn more and register at lawofselfdefense.com/advanced. That's lawofselfdefense.com/advanced. And now we can get to the cross-examination of Detective Brasino by defense counsel Frank Prieto. Scope everything the right size here. Here we go. And again, this is going to play at 1.25 speed. So this is not the speed at which these people naturally speak, but in the interest of time.
Good afternoon, Detective.
Good afternoon.
Detective, we've met before, right?
Yes.
And the first time we met was at the City of Miami Homicide Bureau, correct?
Yes.
I showed up there.
Yes.
And we had a conversation, right?
Yes.
And after our conversations and after I spent some time with you and with Courtney, I believe I gave you my phone number, correct?
Yes.
You have my contact information. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
And I also communicated with a Detective Jerez, who was part of your team that night, correct?
Yes.
At what time do you recall did Detective Jerez let you know that there's an attorney who's representing this client?
It was later in the afternoon.
Later in the afternoon?
Yeah.
And did she notify you by text or by phone?
When we spoke in the station.
So she notified you orally?
Yeah.
Verbally?
Yeah.
What time did you start the interview with Ms. Clinton?
I want to say like 6 or 7. Possibly.
And I think the interview would have been video recorded, correct?
Yes.
And in that video recording, it has a timestamp, correct?
Yes.
So the best evidence for that would be the timestamp on the video, right?
Correct.
I don't want to hold you to a time unless you know 100%.
I don't know 100%.
Fair? Okay. Would that be noted in one of your reports?
Yes.
We have that interview, by the way. I'll probably do a breakdown on that, too.
Now, when you started your interview of Ms. Clinton, you already knew that Mr. Amoncelli had was deceased, correct?
Yes.
You did not tell her that, correct?
I did not.
About how many times would you say she asked about how he was doing throughout the course of that?
Several times.
Several, more than three, more than five, less than 10?
About three or four times.
And what did you tell her every time that she was asking about how he's doing?
That he was just at the hospital and they're still working on him.
And so that's not the truth. That was a lie, correct?
Correct.
Now, you've produced a report in this case, correct? I think it's abbreviated 310 or 301?
Yes.
And what kind of report is that?
That's just a brief report on the investigation.
Okay. And so you have not prepared a final homicide report, correct?
A supplement? No.
No. And are you working on that?
Yes.
And when will that be available for disclosure?
Objection.
Hopefully soon.
Okay. And the contents of that report are going to be consistent with what you're saying here today, correct?
Yes.
And there's not going to be anything added or anything different, correct?
No.
Prior to conducting the interview with his client, did you conduct any background investigation, speak to any other potential witnesses or anything like that prior to conducting your interview?
No.
Did you arrive at the apartment? Was that your initial arrival point, I believe?
Yes.
Okay. So were you able to view the condition of the apartment at that time, or did you go back later?
I briefly looked at the apartment, the condition first, and then I went back later on and looked at it again.
And did you speak to any of the first responding officers prior to conducting the interview with Ms. Money?
Very shortly.
Did they mention to you that she was in a state of panic at the time?
Yes.
When they first showed up?
Yes.
She was covered in blood, right?
Yes.
Which was consistent with, I think, what you said. You reviewed some body-worn camera. That would be consistent with her cradling Mr. Amoncelli in the living room area, correct?
Yes.
And did the other responding officers... Well, let me ask you this. What was her mental state at the time that you first spoke to her?
When I spoke to her, she was more calm than when she was at the building. But she was still a bit shaken up due to what occurred.
Which that would be kind of a normal human reaction, right?
Yes.
Now, also, I believe in the body-worn camera, have you reviewed all the body-worn camera, all the responding officers that evening?
Not all of them, most.
Okay. And a lot of them... Courtney's expressing her concern for Christian, right?
Yes.
And she's in a state of panic. Again, and her dogs are running around the apartment barking. It's a very hectic scene, right?
Yes.
Now, you heard or you saw, I think, when you were testifying direct, a clip of part of Ms. Plenty's statement, correct?
Yes.
And she describes the attack on her by Mr. Amoncelli, correct?
Yes.
There's nobody else in that apartment at the time, correct?
Correct.
There's absolutely no eyewitnesses to what occurred in the apartment on April 3rd, 22, correct?
Correct.
So your investigation focuses around what happened after, basically, right?
Yeah.
Now... the part of the interview that we saw, that was actually the third time that you asked her to kind of recount her. And the first time, do you recall what she said the first time?
It was about the same as the one played on the video.
Okay. So, I mean, there was an argument, right?
Yes.
And your subsequent investigation showed text messages and some calls for, and I'm talking about April 3rd, 2022. We'll get to that other stuff later. Mm-hmm. But on April 3rd, 2022, you got the video of them in the white. Doesn't seem like there's anything wrong.
Yeah.
Right? You have some text messages and some calls that occur right before that.
Yeah.
Right before around 4:30 p.m., correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we know things go bad, right?
Yeah.
We know that because some neighbors called the police, right?
Yes.
They heard screaming and yelling.
Yes. Right?
We know that your investigation also revealed that Courtney was actually on the phone with her mom, right? That was plenty. And she was actually on the phone with her at the time that Christian received the wound, correct?
When he received the wound?
Yeah.
Possibly, yes.
Okay. And so when Courtney's recounting what happened, she talks about physical struggle with Omocelli, right?
Yes.
How big, meaning how tall is Mr. Omocelli?
He's taller than her.
Is he 6'2"?
Yeah. Low six.
Low
6'1", 6'2", something like that.
How much does he weigh?
I want to say about 200 pounds. Or,
okay. And how tall is Courtney Clinton?
She's about 5'8".
And how much does she weigh at the time?
About 140, 150.
Okay, so it's Omocelli outweighs her by about 60, 70 pounds and is much taller, right?
Yes.
Now, she describes his attack on several occasions. I think the third time, right, she mentions that he got in a crouching position where he was crouching and then he came at it, right?
I don't remember that.
No, that's not her statement?
I don't remember that.
Okay. Do you remember her saying she could see the whites of his eyes?
No.
Did you review her statement before coming here to testify today?
Objection, counsel, testify. All sorry.
I reviewed part of it.
Part, not the whole thing. So, again, but you're saying her testimony from the first time you asked her to recount what occurred was similar to the third time, right?
Correct. Okay.
In the arrest, did you author this arrest warrant? And I'm holding it up. It's been admitted into evidence, and judged procedurally. I would move to submit it. We'll try to move into evidence all defense exhibits, which were previously provided to the court. Have we defended?
I don't know.
Defense exhibit A, I believe, was yours.
I don't have any evidence for defense.
Wait, I'm sorry, hold on. I misunderstood something. Can we push that button?
So the defense wants to offer all its exhibits into evidence, and the state probably just wants to make sure that they actually know what's being offered to the judge. It's always a good idea to check to make sure something doesn't get snuck in. Once it's in evidence, it's very difficult to get it pulled out of evidence. So this is the kind of pauses we have in real life pretrial hearings. Especially of this sort, where it's adversarial, a trial in a trial. Now, I do optimize the audio of this post-production, so hopefully it sounds a little better than it's sounding in my ear right now. The audio in the court is as typical, horrifically bad. The microphone seems to mostly pick up people coughing. So right now, defense counsel Pietro is focusing mostly on the early part of the investigation because, well, one, it makes temporal sense to approach it that way. But also, at this stage of the investigation, the detective was leaning towards self-defense, that this was Courtney Clinton defending herself against a larger, stronger, violent domestic abuser. It wasn't until he got to text messages, videos, other witness statements that he realized or concluded that, in fact, the pattern was the reverse, that Courtney Clenny was the violent abuser and Abumselli the victim of her abuse.
Detective, I think I was about to ask you about this, the affidavit in support of the arrest warrant.
Yes.
Did you author that?
I did not.
You didn't author it?
No.
The arrest warrant is met?
No.
Did you sign it?
I did.
You're the affidavit, right? You're the one swearing to this document?
Yes.
Did you read it?
Yes.
Did you go through it?
Yes.
Line by line?
Line by line.
Did you understand what was contained in this document?
Yes.
Let's go through the mischaracterizations of the evidence that are contained in this. The first one, in this affidavit, you talk about, and this is going to be, and please let me know.
By the way, I have this arrest affidavit too, so I'll embed the arrest affidavit into the description of this show.
Need to see this. This is a defense exhibit A. I think the government also introduced the arrest warrant. And this is on page 4 of 6. This is the second full paragraph. You stated, in her explanation to the police regarding the content of the phone calls that day, Dee Klang, which is Deborah, did not say she discussed the incident with the defendant. However, investigators know Dee Klang did communicate with the defendant about the incident because investigators saw a text message from mom on the defendant's phone reported at 5:25 p.m. that mentioned self-defense and advised her not to say anything to investigators without an attorney. In addition to omitting her conversations with defendant Dee Klang, in addition to omitting her conversations with defendant Dee Klang, reported statement also admits any claim that the defendant said she was being attacked by the victim during the call. Do you stand by those words?
Can you read the last sentence one more time?
Yeah, I was trying to object in this characterization because
it's in addition to omitting her conversations with the defendant, Dee Klang's recorded statement also omits any claim that the defendant said she was being attacked by the victim during the call.
Correct.
Okay. You stand by those words?
Yes.
Okay. In your phone call to Deborah Klang, did you ask her, hey, was Courtney attacked?
No.
So when you say she omitted it, you never asked the question, did you?
Correct.
You also, in this paragraph that I read, you indicated that Dee Klang, meaning Courtney's mom, did not communicate, or the investigator, that Deborah Klang did not say she discussed the incident with the defendant, meaning the attack, right?
Correct.
Okay. You didn't ask her about that, did you? Did you say, hey, did Courtney tell you about the attack?
No.
No, you didn't ask her, right? So any omission is because she didn't volunteer it, correct?
Correct.
Now, while you're, as this paragraph says, while you're interviewing her, I guess you saw a phone, a text message kind of pop up on Courtney's phone?
Yes.
And were you able to do that? A text message popped up on the phone, and I guess you're saying this mentions, and it mentioned self-defense?
Yes.
Did you see the entire text message?
I did not.
So your inclusion of that portion that says something about self-defense, it kind of makes it sound like that's something nefarious or somebody's being coached, right? The way you wrote it? These are your words that you adopted, right? It kind of makes it sound like there's a cover up, right?
Yes.
And you put these words in here without seeing the full and complete text message, correct?
Yes.
Now, on the screen here, I think it's Defense Exhibit C, right? But this is a complete text message. At 4:04 p.m., which would be Texas time, so that would be 5:04 p.m., okay, Miami time. Please tell me what's happening. This is from Deborah to Courtney, my sunshine. Please tell me what's happened. You have to call me. Exclamation point. Even though it was self-defense, don't say anything with the police without getting a lawyer first. Call me, please. It's very important. Even though it was self-defense, you cannot say anything without an attorney. Exclamation point. Innocent people get in trouble all the time. Right? That's the complete message. And this is a mother, right? That's in another state. Right?
Objection. Counsel testifying. No question pending. She falls to everything that we just said.
So,
sure. Miss... Do you know where Ms. Klang was, meaning Deborah Klang, on the date of April 3rd, 2022?
Yes.
And where was she?
Texas.
And where was Courtney?
The man.
Okay. So what seems clear to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears that Ms. Deborah Klang was unable to contact her daughter at least between 5:04 p.m. Miami time, and then even going into the late night of 10:46 p.m., there's no responses, right, by Courtney?
Correct.
So this could be a very concerned mother, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Deborah was on the phone with Courtney listening to the argument that night, right?
Yes.
And I believe she told you that when you interviewed Ms. Klang, Deborah Klang, that she could hear Christian yell.
I believe so.
Again, you weren't in the apartment that night, were you?
No.
Now, you testified previously that her first and third recitation of her statement of what happened that night about the attack was consistent, correct?
Yes.
This is page 4 of 6 of your the arrest warrant whose language you adopted. Actually, you know what? Let me stop you there. If you didn't write this, who wrote this?
State attorney.
Which state attorney?
Khalil.
Mr. Quinn?
Yes.
Now, in this paragraph, which is the third full paragraph, again, page 4 of 6, you say, although the defendant admitted to having caused the victim's injury in her post-Miranda recorded statement, she also provided several inconsistent accounts about the incident. Now, you just testified that at least the two of the three are consistent, right?
Mostly.
So this could be perceived to be a little bit misleading, correct?
No.
You had crime scene or somebody had crime scene respond to the homicide group, correct?
Yes.
And I think I may have been there when they came to photograph her.
I can't remember.
I can't remember. Either. Yeah. It's neither here. Sorry. I'll move on. So they came. Sorry, I forgot where I was. So crime scene did come out to the homicide bureau and they photographed Ms. Lenny's physical condition, correct?
Yes.
And that is done to document any injuries, right?
Yes.
You don't take the photographs yourself, do you?
No.
These crime scene technicians are specially trained, correct?
Yes.
And they have like rulers that they can take out to measure things when they're taking photographs, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And in your warrant, well, in the warrant that you signed, again, the last full paragraph, the defendant's physical body was documented on the date of the incident, and there were no injuries to her person to corroborate this account. Now, do you recall that being included in the warrant?
Yes.
Okay, and that's for the record, and for Your Honor, it's page 4 of 6. Now, on the screen, which is Defense Exhibit H, these are crime scene photos, are they not?
Yes.
And these are taken by your department, correct?
Yes.
And these was then provided to the state and then provided to the defense, right?
Yes.
Okay, on the left side of the screen, there seems to be a bruise on the inside of her right arm. Do you see that?
Yes.
Could that bruise be consistent with a physical altercation?
At some point, yeah.
Do you see a bruise, a visible bruise on Courtney's left, sorry, the right arm? Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay. And on the right side of the screen, it looks like could be an abrasion. I don't know, there's a mark there that we circled on the right shoulder. Do you see that mark?
Yes.
Could that mark be consistent with some kind of physical altercation?
Yes.
We also have crime scene photos, again, the inside of their right arm. This is, I think, a closer up view of what we saw a second ago. And in this picture, there's a ruler, right?
Okay, yes. Sir.
And if you need to get up with Your Honor's permission, if the witness needs to get down, thank you, Judge. And they measure that just so there's some type of kind of comparison or if they need to describe the extent of an injury, right?
Yes.
And they take it out for something that they think is important to document, correct?
Yes.
So then we go on the lower, again, another crime scene photo, lower right leg that we've taken liberty of circling. There seems to be some discoloration there, correct?
Yes.
And that could be bruising, maybe not. You're not an expert, right?
Correct.
So these pictures actually do show signs of physical injury, right?
Yes.
Can we approach that mark?
So, defense counsel Prieto, cross-examining lead detective Rossino, is trying to make the point that there are injuries, he says, that are consistent with Courtney Clenny having been compelled to defend herself against Abam Selly. The state and its direct already pointed out that there are preceding pictures from days earlier that show these bruises, so that they could not have been caused by the by Abam Selly the day he was killed. So the defense is just misrepresenting the nature of these photographs.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, Detective Underwright, you testified that the medical examiner said that basically throwing a knife from that distance in that manner couldn't have caused that wound. Is that basically a summary of what he told you?
Yes.
Okay. Are you a knife expert?
No.
Is the medical examiner a knife expert?
I don't know.
Now, in the when the state was up here asking you a question that this has to be stabbing, in motion, in a very almost a 90-degree motion, downward stabbing. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Now, is what the government state attorney, was that gesture, is that accurate and consistent with what the medical examiner's report says?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Detective, did you review the report from the medical examiner?
So, objection and proper impeachment. Also, it's going to be a fair condition.
And the judge is really not mic'd up at all. It's like there's one microphone. Everyone's, well, one for the witness, one for the lectern where Prieto is. And anything the other lawyers say has to be caught, captured by the lectern microphone. So Courtney Clenny claims that she just kind of tossed the knife at Album Selling. They replicated this in direct testimony during her interview by Detective Prisino, made it like a football kind of throw. Not like, holding it by the point and throwing it like a knife thrower might throw it. And the medical examiner.
You did review the medical examiner's report, correct?
Yes.
And his report indicates that it is a slight downward angle, correct?
Yes.
Rossino thinks she just stabbed him with the knife in her hand. From on top to bottom, cross body would cause that kind of injury. It wasn't a very big knife.
You testified on direct that you didn't see any bruising or marks around Courtney, correct?
Correct.
In her statement to you, she did mention that he had you grabbed by the neck or had her up against the wall by the neck?
Yes.
And have you ever seen a particular situation where somebody could have their forearm up to somebody's neck?
Yes.
And that wouldn't necessarily cause bruising, would it?
Yeah, that's a speculation.
And Ms. Clenny indicated also that at some point you threw her down to the ground, correct?
Yes. Before?
And I think she said on her shoulder.
She wasn't able to explain to me how he put her on the ground.
Right. I think she said something like, and then I was on the ground, right?
Yes.
Okay. Which somebody who's just experienced a traumatic experience, that Courtney experience, that wouldn't necessarily mean that she has an accurate memory, correct?
Objection.
Detective, have you ever been in a fight before?
Okay. Yes.
Was it a traumatic experience? Do you remember every detail about that fight?
Like, I grew up doing martial arts, so yes.
In Courtney's statement at some point, she said she was able to break free, correct?
Yes.
Or she was able to get up, right?
She wasn't able, she was able to, she explained that he wasn't on top of her anymore, but she was able to get out, but she couldn't explain exactly how.
And you testified again. After looking at the crime scene after speaking to Ms. Plenty that night, after you spoke with me, you were looking at this case as a case of self-defense, correct?
Yes.
Now, as part of your investigation, did you try to canvass the area to find other witnesses?
We attempted to contact other members of the building in the same hallway as well.
And were you able to locate the witness that said he saw Christian hitting Courtney in the head prior to April 3rd, 2022?
I could not find him.
But you heard about that witness, correct?
Yes.
It was reported to you by somebody else, right?
Yes.
And I believe that account was told to you that person wasn't sure if it was a closed hit fist or an open hand, correct?
Yes.
But so you do have some evidence, right, throughout the course of your investigation that at a minimum, Amoncelli also hit Courtney at least once, that you're aware.
From what I was told, yeah.
Did you also interview any witnesses, neighbors in this case?
I attempted, but they refused to talk or be involved.
When you say they refused to be involved, what do you mean?
Like they didn't want to talk to me or give any type of statement.
And that was all the neighbors in the building?
Not in the building, but actually, hold on. I did speak to two gentlemen.
Okay. You did speak to two witnesses, right?
Yes.
One whose initials are JS and another one's initials are EB, correct?
I can't remember right now.
Detective Sophie, I don't want to necessarily put their names on the record now, but one of the witnesses, JS, I guess. So the first person you interviewed, remember the first gentleman you interviewed? I don't want to play your whole interview. I have some excerpts that I'll play later for the court so we can move through this. But in substance, would you agree that individual basically said he had seen incidents of, I think, Christian Amoncelli chasing or running around Courtney's car trying to gain entry? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Okay. And that same individual also, in that same interview, said, basically, look, I know a victim of domestic violence when I see one, and Courtney was a victim of domestic violence, right?
In the property.
Correct.
If that person thinks it's improper, it may be that it's improper.
That interview, in your interview of that individual, he opined, in his opinion, right, that Courtney was a victim of domestic violence. Is that true?
Yes.
Now, you interviewed another gentleman. I think it was just right after that.
Yeah.
And that individual recounted the scene at the dog park, correct?
Yes.
And in that recounting of that scene, right, he talked about Christian grabbing her aggressively in the tricep area, correct? And he also told you that he stayed around and stayed behind in case something, quote unquote, went down, correct?
Yes.
Because he was concerned.
Yes.
And I think he also mentioned that Christian had his hands on her face, correct?
I don't remember.
Now, I want to go back to Ms. Plenty, Deborah Plenty, remember that?
Yes.
And actually, you never asked the questions about did you describe the attack and you did the stuff before, you remember that?
Yes.
And part of that is because I showed up at the Homicide Bureau and that kind of ended the phone call, right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you were kind enough, you were very cordial with me, very very professional with me, and you allowed me to come in, right?
Yes.
And that terminated your call with Ms. Plenty, right?
Yeah. I mean, we were pretty much almost done with the call.
Okay. And in that, you never called Ms. Plenty to follow up and do another interview to get more details?
No.
You never called her husband, Kim, to maybe follow up because you said he was on the line. You never followed up with him, right?
No.
You didn't call me and say, hey, can you talk to Deborah Plenty and have her make a statement to me?
No.
But what she did tell you was she overheard Courtney saying, stay back, right? Stay back.
Yes.
And then we know, based upon your cell phone analysis, right, that Courtney called 911 herself, right?
Yes.
And we heard it. She's there panicking, trying to get help, right?
Yes.
And again, when the first responder showed up, she was cradling Mr. Umbancelli in her arms, correct?
Yes.
Now, you also served let me ask you this. Did Courtney, during your interview, she was remorseful, right?
Yes.
Objection, relevance.
Right? She seemed remorseful and genuine with you, correct?
Yes.
Objection, calls her ability on witness. That's right.
You said you executed some warrants in this case, one of which was financial documents, right?
Yes.
And those financial documents were reporting?
It was a subpoena. And yes, it was reporting.
Okay. You got a response, right?
Yes.
And, did you serve a subpoena on Umbancelli's bank accounts?
No.
Why not?
No reason.
Do you know how he was supporting himself?
Objection, relevance.
Did your investigation reveal that he was a cryptocurrency trader?
Yes.
Objection, 11 for inquiry here.
I mean, I expect we'll find that Umbancelli, the victim, was just really living off Courtney Clinton's OnlyFans money. She'd made like $3 million the preceding year. By the way, just about a month ago, Courtney's parents were arrested, charged with evidence tampering. Apparently, when they arrived at the apartment some days after the stabbing, there was a laptop there, and they seized the laptop and didn't tell authorities they had it, and it was Umbancelli's laptop. So now they're criminally charged in this case. They were arrested and then released on bail. That they're facing pending charges of evidence tampering. I'll skip ahead.
I'll move on to a different line of questioning. You did serve a subpoena though on the building, Mount Brazil, correct?
Yes.
And as part of the documents you returned, you obtained a lease agreement, correct?
Yes.
And whose name's on that lease agreement for the apartment where this incident took place?
The defendant.
Courtney's name.
Yes.
Is Umbancelli's name anywhere on that lease agreement?
No.
As part of you serving subpoenas on bank accounts and financial records of Courtney, did you see the payments being made for rent?
I can't remember.
Do you have any evidence that Mr. Umbancelli ever paid rent?
I
can explain the relevance to you. Did you find any evidence that Mr. Umbancelli ever paid rent?
No.
Now, part of your investigation also revealed that the week prior to April 3rd, 2022, Ms. Clay had to fly in from Texas to help Courtney get him out of the apartment, correct?
Yes.
And at some point, he was thrown out of the apartment, correct?
Yes.
And then he came back, right?
Yes.
So during the time that he was out of the apartment when Ms. Clay was there, do you know where he stayed?
No.
Did you interview any of the employees of the building that said he was living in a common area inside the building?
Objection. So there's two questions within that one question.
Did your investigation reveal at any point that Mr. Umbancelli was staying in common areas within the One Paraiso building?
Yes.
Now you discussed the manner in which you get up to the apartment in the elevator. Could you is it fair to say that you have to have a key fob in order to get into a specific apartment?
Yes.
And that particular fob is programmed only for that particular floor or apartment, correct?
Yes.
And the elevator, when it opens up directly into the apartment, correct?
Yes.
So once somebody gains access to the elevator, activates the fob, the next stop is the apartment, yes. Right?
Fancy.
Now, you testified about an elevator video, the infamous elevator video.
Send it back to the judge.
You previously testified about the elevator. I have one. You previously testified about the elevator incident where you say Ms. Kalani was attacking Christian?
Yes.
Okay. You just have the video, right?
Yes.
What happened before they got in the elevator?
You don't know. Or I don't really recall what happened before.
You don't know what happened before that elevator video, correct?
Yes.
Did you interview any witnesses that told you what happened before that incident in the elevator?
No.
So all you have is a video?
Yes.
No context to what occurred prior to Courtney getting on that elevator, correct?
Correct.
Now, she seemed pretty upset in that video, correct?
Yes.
And at some point, Mr. Elmoselli is able to gain access to the control panel to get the fob, correct?
To use the fob, yeah.
Right. And that fob would take him directly into the apartment, correct?
Yes.
So the only way to get Mr. Elmoselli not to go to that apartment would be to not allow him to use the fob, correct?
Yes.
Do you know if Courtney wanted him in the apartment that evening?
Judge, that's my question.
Again, that was about a month and a half prior to April 3rd, 2022?
Yes.
As part of your investigation, did you review body-worn camera footage of an incident that took place at the One Paraiso condominium on April 1st, 2022?
I did, but I don't remember what was on it.
Would that video, if you can recall, would that video have depicted some officers responding to a domestic dispute?
Yes.
And in that video, you recall Courtney explicitly saying, I want a restraining order against Christian Elmoselli?
Yes.
You didn't put that into any reports, did you?
Not yet.
Now, Detective, in April of 2022, you had been with the homicide unit for less than 1 year, correct?
Yes.
Prior to that, what was your assignment?
I was in robbery.
Prior to being a robbery, sorry, I cut you off. I didn't hear your response. You were a robbery detective and you were going to say something else.
No, that was just it.
Prior to being assigned to the robbery unit, where were you?
I was in the problem solving team. I was in the problem solving team in Overton.
What? I'm not familiar. What is it?
That's just a unit that proactively works on ongoing issues within the community.
Okay. And prior to that, I'm going to guess you were on patrol street?
Yes.
Okay. In a marked unit?
Yes.
Okay. During the course of your experience while being a police officer, you run into victims of domestic violence?
Yes.
Are you familiar? Let me ask you this. When you're in the police academy, or as part of your ongoing training as a police officer, are you trained to notice signs of domestic violence?
Same objection. Also a proper opinion.
I'm asking if he's been trained on. Have you been trained on detecting signs of domestic violence?
Yes.
Are you trained about what they call the cycle of violence?
Objection to 702.
As part of your investigation, you indicated that you also subpoenaed or obtained police.
So he's had training on domestic violence, but he hasn't been qualified as an expert in domestic violence. So the state is objecting because they don't want him to be asked for his opinion on domestic violence, which ought to be offered only by someone who's been qualified as an expert by the court.
Reports from Las Vegas, Nevada, correct?
Yes.
And we talked about that at length with the state attorney on direct examination, correct?
Yes.
And in your subpoenaing of those records, in addition to the police report, also came a statement, a sworn statement by one of the hotel security officers. Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
And in that report, well, let me ask you, did you review the body-worn camera of that incident?
Yes.
And I believe the investigating officer was Detective, or I think Officer Velasco?
Building officer, I don't remember that, the name.
Okay. And this is the video, just so we can make sure we're talking about the same one. The video of the officer who first goes to see, I think speaks to Mr. Amoncelli.
Yes.
And then talks to Courtney.
Yes.
But the first person he talks to is, I think, some member of the hotel security staff, correct?
Yes.
And when he approaches that individual gives him kind of a summary of what they have, so to speak, correct?
Yes.
And what he says is security got called, right?
Yes.
Who called security?
I can't remember.
Well, was it Courtney or was it Christian?
Honestly, I can't remember.
Okay. If I told you it was Courtney, would you believe me?
Same objection.
So you don't recall?
I don't.
Well, we'll play it for you, or well, not for you. We'll play it. And in so do you recall that person telling you that his security people came into the hotel room and noticed clumps of Courtney's hair on the floor?
Yes.
Now, as a trained investigator, clumps of hair on the floor, would that indicate some kind of physical struggle to you?
Objection. Speculation.
You can answer the question.
Yes.
Now, in that interview, Courtney admits she threw a glass at Christian, right?
Yes.
The glass didn't hit him, did it?
I'm not sure.
Also in that video, Courtney tells the officer right before she's being arrested that she didn't tell him the whole story, right?
Yes.
Because she didn't want Christian to get in trouble, right?
Yes.
So you testified as a medical examiner. I think you communicated that in your interaction with him and reading his report, the manner of death was a homicide, right?
Yes.
By a single stab wound, right, to the subclavian artery, correct?
Yes.
Now, in your training experience, even a homicide, right, can be justified, right?
Yes.
And initially, you didn't make any arrests because we were looking at this as self-defense, correct?
Definitely.
Yes.
Now, you talked about blood spatter and
droplets
and pooling of blood, right? You're not a blood spatter expert, correct?
No.
You were just recanting what's on the scene that you saw, right?
Yes.
And that the blood, as far as you're concerned, was consistent with somebody sustaining an injury and then walking around the apartment or running around the apartment, right? You don't have to look at the state. Look at me when you answer the questions.
Okay.
He's asking questions
that will
affect
the objection. I don't know what it's going to be. Objection.
Perhaps.
7-2 states correct.
So is the blood that you saw at the scene, I'm not asking you for an expert opinion, but it's consistent with somebody walking or running around the apartment after sustaining an injury, correct?
Yes.
Now, do you know, again, you weren't there when the injury occurred, right?
Correct.
You also mentioned in the Las Vegas video body cam, I think that the court said, oh, yeah, I threw a plate at him or something, some other stuff. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Are you Hispanic?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have an umbrella?
Jack shit.
Do you have a grandmother? On the phone. Do you know what a chancleta is, Detective?
Jack.
On the phone, Judge. I'm sorry. Now, you also said you pulled Ms. Plenty's entire criminal history, correct?
Yes.
And you said there was a California case? DWI or DUI?
I think they call it DWI over there.
Right. And that was a case that the charges were dropped, right?
Right now I can't remember.
And the incident in Las Vegas, where she was arrested for battery, right? That case was also dropped, correct?
Yes.
You also testified that you did a cell phone extraction of Mr. Omboselli's phone, correct?
Yes.
Right. And that was you were capable to do that because Ms. Plenty gave you the password for that phone, right?
Yes.
She was cooperative with you during your investigation, correct?
Yes.
And in fact, I offered to be cooperative with you throughout the course of your investigation, correct?
Yes.
I'd call you every now and then just to follow up, right?
Yes.
And I'd text you, right?
Yes.
And I even said, hey, look, you know, if something changes in your investigation, let me know and we'll go to your office. Surrender, right?
Yes.
Detective, you, in extracting that cell phone, you testified on direct about text messages, specifically text messages that took place on October 9th and 10th, I believe it was. Do you recall those text messages?
Yes.
And I believe those, basically, in summary, you said that those text messages indicate that there was a physical altercation and Courtney hit him in the head with the phone, correct?
Yes.
There was a physical struggle, correct?
Yes.
Do you know what happened that caused Ms. Clinton to take that drastic action?
May I review my notes real quick?
Sure.
No, I don't remember right now.
Okay. I think it was, again, this is State's Exhibit 4, is the text messages from October 9th, where he mentions that I think Christian says, oh, he's been stabbing my leg or something to that effect.
Yes.
Right? In the follow-up text messages, by Courtney responding to that, she never admits to stabbing him in the leg, correct?
I would have to go back to the messages for that section.
You don't remember?
No, not enough.
I mean, that would be something important, right? That
yes.
You would have noted?
Yes.
She would make an admission of stabbing him previously, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Did you know that Christian would harm himself sometimes by cutting himself?
No.
You didn't know that? In your interview of Courtney, did she not disclose that to you?
Judge. Go back up. And what happened?
Can you say it again?
Did Ms. Clanny, during the course of your interview with her, tell you that Christian would cut himself?
I remember that she said that he tried to hurt himself at one point, but I don't remember to what extent.
Okay. Now, the text messages on State's Exhibit 4, I have up on the screen. Remember this text message, which came hours later, after Christian describes being hit by with a phone. Do you remember Courtney's response? It looks like 4:34 a.m. Whatever time that was. I think this is in Las Vegas. Do you remember? If you decide to get security, call. I will let them know exactly what happened.
What's the question?
Do you recall
if I remember that? Yeah.
So is it fair to say that these texts don't say exactly what happened?
No.
And it appears to me Courtney's not afraid of telling somebody exactly what happened, right? That's her text?
Correct.
Now, you also have text messages from January 30th, which you went through with the state that talk about where he actually goes to the hospital and receives stitches, right?
Yes.
And he's cut across, you know, his chin and I think he said his cheek, correct?
Yes.
Now, I think that was an argument over some text messages, right?
Yes.
Again, we don't know what happened in phone calls, perhaps, prior to the text messages?
No.
We don't know what conversations they may have had, correct?
No.
All we have is these texts, right?
Yes.
Again, this is where the state indicated that she said, oh, I hope you enjoy the hospital, something to that effect. I just hope you have time to cool down or think about your actions, right?
Oh, I don't know about cool down, but...
Well, hopefully, okay, for these texts, hopefully this will give you time to think about your actions, right?
Yes.
cool down, those are my words, right? Enjoy the hospital. Right? You don't know what prompted her prior to these texts to send this, do you?
I mean, enjoy the hospital. Nobody wants to enjoy the hospital.
Right, but you don't know what occurred, right?
No.
Okay. Now, again, in the follow-up message, right, Courtney tells Christian, tell them your side, then I'll tell, sorry, tell them your side, then I'll tell them what happened. Right? She texts that.
Yes.
Is somebody who's afraid of the truth coming out, would they send a text like that? And his answer is that I'm not saying anything.
Yes.
Right? I mean, people could not want to say anything for a bunch of reasons. Right? One of which could be that Christian doesn't want the truth to come out, correct?
Objection, speculation, counter testifying.
Then I think her next test is an LMAO, right? And then followed by you should, meaning she's asking him to tell whoever what happened, right?
Objection, speculation, best evidence, counter testifying.
Can you repeat it?
I'm saying after the LMAO, her text says you should, meaning you should tell somebody what happened, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the logical reading of this. Right? I'm not making this up.
Objection, counsel doesn't plan. I just want to ask the court to correct counsel to object to the press.
Did you, I think you indicated that the photograph of his stitches pinged, that the GPS data associated with that picture. Put him at Mount Sinai Hospital?
Yes.
In that area, right?
One of the injuries points at Mount Sinai Hospital.
Okay. Did you pull the medical records? Did you serve a subpoena for the medical records from Mount Sinai Hospital?
I did not.
Do you know if the state executed a subpoena for those medical records?
I don't know.
Do we know for a fact that that's where he was treated at Mount Sinai?
I mean, the ping's right on top of Mount Sinai, so. And he was in the bed, and the picture shows that he's in a medical bed.
Right. I mean, I'm just trying to figure it out.
There's no other hospital.
It could be an urgent care meeting in that area. Now, you mentioned in those photos that Christian had raccoon eyes.
Yes.
And what does that mean? Dark circles in his eyes?
Yes.
Doesn't necessarily mean he was hit punched in the eye, does it?
Well, compared to... Well, he already has a laceration to the bottom of the lip and injuries to his face. So it's consistent with getting hit multiple times and also slashed in the face.
Right, Detective, you can't say one way or the other whether those dark circles are from a physical contact or maybe he hadn't slept for a long time, right?
Definitely not that he hasn't slept in a long time. They're definitely injuries.
Do you know that Christian and Courtney were up at all times of the night? I mean, they were living kind of a party lifestyle, wouldn't you agree?
Definitely.
It was drugs involved, correct?
Yes.
There's some text messages talk about Christian using cocaine with Courtney?
Yes.
Detected as part of crime scene responding to the apartment where this incident occurred. They also photographed certain items that had some type of evidentiary value, correct?
Yes.
And part of what they photographed were letters written from Christian to Courtney, correct?
Yes.
And in your assessment of those letters, would you say that those letters are an acknowledgement of his abuse of Courtney?
I can't remember.
Speculation, best evidence.
Did you see those photos?
I did.
Did you read them? Well, did you read the wording contained in those photos?
I read them.
Okay. If you look up on the screen, then it's Exhibit E. Looks like this letter was torn up at some point. Is this what I'm talking about? The photographs of the letters?
Yes.
And there's highlighted sections in there, correct?
Okay. Several objections from the oversight.
Back to sidebar. So the judge is overruling a lot of the state objections. I suspect those objections would be upheld at trial if this was being done before a jury. But she's trying to expedite the hearing. I mean, she's familiar with the evidence. She'd seen it all. And, of course, defense counsel is trying to weave together a particular narrative out of these building blocks of evidence, a narrative of his client being the victim of abuse who simply had to defend herself. Unfortunately, like we saw with Hannah Gutierrez and Alec Baldwin, she did give a statement to police without a lawyer present, and the things she said in that statement are either not credible with the forensic evidence, the nature of the wound, and not credible in terms of how she claims the injury was caused. That she just kind of tossed the knife from 10 feet away and got this quite deep stabbing injury to the heart, major blood vessels of the heart. And to the extent there's evidence that the victim was also abusive. Most abusive relationships are reciprocal. Both parties are abusive. Birds of a feather flock together. After this cross-examination, there's about 20 or 25 minutes of redirect, which will be faster than that because we're at 1.25 speed. And then about 3 minutes of recross. And if time permits, I'm gonna continue from this cross-examination to those last redirects and recross, just so we can wrap up the casino in this part.
You on OT?
Yep.
This your day? So, since you stayed.
I'll skip ahead.
There were some letters that were just kind of recapping. So there were some letters that were photographed and retained as evidence by your department, correct?
Yes.
And as the lead investigator, lead homicide investigator in this case, I'm sure you reviewed that evidence, correct?
Yes.
And you recall these letters?
Yes.
Okay. And so defense exhibit A is what the government provided to us, that you see, the department sees. And part of the letters, although it's writ, says that he's guilty of gaslighting her, right, and mentally abusing her. Right? Those are the words contained in this document?
I can't remember. So I don't feel comfortable answering that.
Okay. That's fair enough. Were you able to determine that these letters were written by Umm Selly to Courtney?
Again, I can't remember. I read them that one time and then that was months ago.
The court has these, the witness in case he has no memory, so I'll move on, Judge. Now, you testified as well as to some recordings that were made by Umm Selly, where Courtney can be heard screaming, right?
Yes.
And it's actually, we've mentioned it's video, but it's a video file, but it's actually just audio, correct?
No, I think...
Except for one that's in the lobby.
I think they're all video.
Well, they're video files, but there's actually no video because the phone is secreted.
If you watch carefully, at one point he does take out the phone. And then you can see the defendant on the floor screaming.
Okay. The point of it is, the bulk of it is just audio, right?
Okay, yes.
Okay. Now, the person who recorded that is who?
The victim.
Mr. Umm Selly, right?
Yes.
He knows he's being recorded, right?
Yes.
If you know you're being recorded, you're going to say kind of, you know, what you want to say, right? That person has an advantage to know they're being recorded, correct?
Yes.
You don't know what happened before that recording took place.
No.
You don't know what happened after that recording took place.
No.
And that's true for the several recordings that are part of the evidence in this case, right?
Yes.
As part of the documentation that you pulled from the Juan Perezo, his management company, we also think you said you were provided incident reports, correct?
Say that again.
The Juan Perezo subpoena returned a bunch of incident reports, correct?
Yes.
And you said there was like a lot of them, right?
Yes.
Something like, those are not your words, those are mine, but it was a lot, right?
Yes.
Too many, I think you said.
Too many.
Right? Which would show the history of some kind of domestic issues going on, correct?
Yes.
And one of those, again, was the body-worn camera from April 1st, 2022, correct?
Yes.
Where Courtney asked for a restraining order, correct?
Yes.
And in that same video, right, one of the officers asks her if he's been violent with her in the past, correct?
I can't remember.
Okay. Well, we'll move on. It's been admitted as an exhibit. Now, you mentioned something about Christian's file was 01027 and Courtney's file was 01058. Is that correct?
Yes.
And at some point, clearly, I think you testified that her FOB became inactive in March of 2022, correct?
Yes.
Okay. You don't know when she lost that FOB, do you?
No.
Now, Dave, the elevator video, you don't know if she had her FOB on her, correct?
Correct.
She might have left it upstairs, correct?
Yes.
Now, you mentioned you served subpoenas on Courtney's for her financial records on some banks. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, I think you testified it was $2 million.
Yeah, just
is it
over 2 million.
It's over 2 million? It's not over 1.3 million?
No, remember the total between both wire transfers? It equals over 2 million.
You sure?
I believe so, yes.
You want to review anything before you say that that's your final answer?
No.
Now, the state talks about your efforts to locate Ms. Klein.
Yes.
Right? You remember testifying about those efforts?
Yes.
Right. You actually traveled to Hawaii, right, when you found out she was there?
Yes.
So you got a free trip to Hawaii?
Yes.
Paid for, the city of Miami paid for that, right?
Yes.
So before you decided to fly to Hawaii to effectuate the arrest of Ms. Klein, did you lose your phone?
No.
So you had my contact information, correct?
Yes.
You never called me and said, hey, Frank, you know what? Things have changed. And we want to surrender Ms. Klein, right?
Objection valid.
Say that again.
You never called me and said, hey, listen, things have changed. Bring in your client.
No.
No? Instead, you enlisted the U.S. Marshals to go get Courtney out of Hilo, Hawaii. And do you know where she was in Hilo, Hawaii?
She was in rehab facility.
In a medical rehabilitation facility, right?
Jackie, you can testify.
She didn't flee to Hawaii, correct?
Jackie, you know what? I was wrong.
Yes. I mean, what was the question? Sorry.
Did you think she fled to Hawaii?
No.
She was there to get help, right?
Yes.
Did you speak with her?
Yes.
When you were in Hawaii?
Yes.
Did you tell her that you thought your investigation was closed? You're under oath.
If I thought that she was under
oath. Did you tell her that this case had been closed by you?
That I was closed?
Yes, sir.
No.
And again, just talking about the phase two issues, you recall me staying in contact with you maybe every couple of weeks or 3 weeks or a month, I would contact you, correct?
Yes.
Now, talk
more, counsel.
So he's talking here about phase two issues. So with these Arthur hearings, there's two phases. The first phase is like a mini trial, which is what we've been listening to, where witnesses testify. And the burden is on the state to prove by a great presumption that the defendant's likely to be found guilty at trial. That's phase one. Is the defendant likely to be found guilty at trial by a great presumption? That burden is on the state. Phase two of the Arthur hearing is a determination of whether or not the defendant is likely to flee if they're given pretrial release. So here the lawyer, the defense lawyer, is talking about, hey, I kept in touch with you and we were always on the phone and texting. And so he's trying to create the narrative that if this judge were to release his client, that she wouldn't flee, that she'd come to court when she was supposed to and all that kind of stuff. So it would be safe from that perspective, the phase two flight risk perspective, to give her pretrial release.
Please ask a question and get an answer.
Now, in reviewing the financial records, right, you're just reviewing the documents, correct?
Yes.
Do you know why she transferred those monies into her father's account?
No.
Do you know how much she currently has in her accounts?
Right now, no. Yes. Right now, no.
When you got the subpoena returned, when was that?
I can't remember the exact date.
And what was the balance in her accounts?
I believe it was about $4,000.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for Cross. That's it for Cross. Now, State's going to come in for redirect. Redirect is about 40 minutes, probably about 30 minutes. And then about 3 minutes across. I think we just have time to get it done before I have a live stream I have to do at the top of the hour. So let's go ahead. Skipping forward.
It's just attached. Oh. If it pleases the court. If it pleases the court. As discussed, sidebar, the state provided the clerk an exhibit to just attach, which will include exhibit 33, the Instagram live video. Detective, I want to pick up a little bit where Mr. Prates left off, and he discussed with you about not contacting him when a decision to arrest was made. When was your arrest warrant signed, if you remember?
I don't remember the exact date.
With the warrant for fresh recollection?
Yes.
Okay, do you have a copy of it?
I do.
Give me 1 second. Do you have a copy of the warrant? When was that warrant signed?
August 4th.
Okay. 2022. You remember when the defendant was arrested?
Yeah, it was like a week later.
Okay. This warrant, was obtained under seal. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall why it was obtained under seal?
So no hints would be given to the defendant and then they would flee again. Anywhere else.
Okay, so you said flee again, or anywhere else. Yes. So I want to parse that out because Mr. Prieto asked you the question. Mr. Prieto, on cross-examination, asked you the question, did you believe the defendant fled to Hawaii? Your initial answer was yes. He then asked you again in a different way. You said no, and then he asked you about rehab. So I want to redirect you as to that conversation. Okay. In the context of the defendant being in a rehab facility, you don't have any reason to doubt that she was there for some time.
Correct.
It can. Do you agree that it's simultaneously true that she could have fled there?
Possibly, yes.
Okay. Was that a concern and why you did not contact Mr. Prieto?
Yes.
You've been in homicide and robbery units. Do you agree that those units are highly investigated?
Yes.
In the context of those investigated units, does the city of Miami do everything by themselves or did they rely on the prosecutor's office?
We rely on prosecutors as well.
And that's true for review of search warrants, subpoenas, and particularly arrest warrants?
Yes.
So let's walk through that. In the nature of a homicide investigation, how many have you participated with there been arrests?
Currently,
I'm talking about participating. So if you assisted as robbery or anything else.
Oh, and robbery too?
Yeah, all homicide investigations that you've ever assisted on. How many have been?
On homicide alone, about six. Six or seven that have been. No, about eight with that have made an arrest, and then in robbery, probably over 100.
And how many of those the defendant asked to surrender themselves? It's redirect. It's redirect.
None.
Is a homicide a dangerous crime?
Yes.
In dangerous crimes, how do police approach the apprehension of a subject?
As safe as possible.
Why is that?
Because a lot of the times they know that they're going to spend the rest of their life in jail, so they'll take any action to not go to jail.
Mr. Prieto discussed with you regarding, quote-unquote, cooperating with the investigation. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay. In this case, you mentioned that you obtained cell phones and did search warrants on those.
Yes.
For Ms. Clinton, how many phones did you obtain?
Two.
How many warrants did you execute?
Two.
At any point in time, was the defense counsel contacted about the password to search those devices?
No.
They were not? At no point in time, the defense is offered to or was contacted?
No.
In September of this year, the defense was not contacted for the pick. The defense ever provided a plan for the phone?
No.
Have you been able to answer her phone?
No.
What efforts have been expended in attempting to answer her phone?
We have taken the phone to the Secret Service, and they have attempted to do what is called a brute force to be able to get into the phone.
With regards to the cases that the defendant had, one of which was the Las Vegas case, Mr. Prieto asked you about the posture of that case, and more specifically, whether it's been dropped or prosecuted or offended. You remember that?
Yes.
Okay. The Las Vegas case, you said it was dropped.
Yes.
The victim in that case, and sole witness, was the victim in this case?
Yes.
And that's now a deceased person?
Yes.
In the context of that letter, which you saw in the one time you reviewed it, was there any documentation of physical abuse by...
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one time?
Sure. In the letter that the defense showed on the screen,
yes.
That was torn in the middle and missing a chunk. Do you know what Christian Omoselli's writing looks like?
No.
Do you know if that was him that wrote that letter?
No.
It was certainly signed by a Christian Omoselli.
I can't remember if it was signed or not, but...
So you don't know if he wrote it?
I don't.
You don't know if the defendant wrote it?
No.
You don't know the context of that letter?
That I remember, no.
That letter itself did not document any incidents of physical abuse.
I don't remember.
Let's talk about some of the messages that Mr. Prieto discussed with you. He mentioned the October 9th, 10th, and 11th sequence of messages. And specifically, he showed the screen message where it says, tell them exactly what happened. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Was that a threat?
Injection calls for speculation.
In what context was that message given?
Objection, calls for speculation.
The message, tell them exactly what happened. What occurred immediately before that message and immediately after that message?
I would have to see the messages. I can't really remember right now off the top of my head.
Sure, I'll just direct the court. The January 30th messages Mr. Prieto put on screen, the first message was said something to the effect about this will give you time to think about your actions. And then a second message shortly after it said enjoy the hospital.
Yes.
That was the first message. Think about your actions was the first message after that time break you were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Okay. So there was the argument that was documented over the overtime of the football game.
Yes.
There was a break in time. I'm not trying to offer anything, so tell me if I'm wrong here. I'm just trying to understand your testimony. There was the argument, time break, and then the first message was, tell them, think about your actions and enjoy the hospital.
Yes.
Okay. The defendant, like Mr. Prieto showed on screen, wrote LMAO. What does LMAO mean?
Laughing their ass off.
Okay, so the defendant was mocking the victim.
Objection, cause for speculation.
Did you read all of those messages, like beginning to end and all of them?
I did.
Okay, so in the context of processing those messages in those contexts,
yes.
Is the defendant mocking the victim?
Objection, cause for speculation.
You can opine.
Yes.
Mr. Prieto asked you about your ability to identify victims of domestic violence. So I want to talk about that. Victims of domestic violence, do they often cover for their abusers?
Yes.
Mr. Fraser even asked you about the Las Vegas incident where Ms. Clenny at the end said, well, I didn't tell you everything. Right?
Yes.
Okay. So is it uncommon for a victim of an aggravated battery to not tell the hospital what caused it?
I'm catching it.
Redirecting. When you saw the body camera of the Las Vegas incident, the officer, before kind of really anything, went straight to Mr. Lomaselli and read him his Miranda rights, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is it uncommon for males to be perceived as the aggressor in domestic violence incidents?
It's not uncommon.
As a police officer yourself, is that often who you perceive to be the subject or the culprit party?
Yes.
Okay. Was that the case here?
Yes.
Such as in Las Vegas, where there was further investigation into the defendant was the aggressor, is that what happened here?
Yes.
And let's talk about how you got there. The arrest warrant. You said you've worked on eight homicide cases. How many have been arrests in homicide cases? How many of those arrests were yours?
Seven of them.
Okay. And on those, how many did you apply for arrest warrants?
Maybe six of those.
In those contexts, is the state heavily involved in the writing of the arrest warrant?
Say that again?
Is the state heavily involved in the writing of the arrest warrant?
Yes.
Initially, for example, you perceived this to be a justifiable use of force before you got everything else.
Yes.
As part of your initial perception, is that the final call on that prosecution?
No.
Okay. What happens in a homicide investigation where you pursue an arrest warrant?
I have to sit with the state attorney's office and we have to go through everything that has been found in the case to come to a conclusion.
Are you directed by the state to pursue investigative steps?
Yes.
As part of being directed by the state attorney's office to pursue investigative steps, does that include subpoenas?
Yes.
Can you write a subpoena?
No.
Can you issue a subpoena?
No.
Who do you need to issue a subpoena?
I need the state attorney's office.
Let's talk about Ms. Clinton's, the defendant's statement to you. Mr. Prieto asked you, and essentially she outlined three iterations of the incident. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay. And he tried to focus in on the part of the warrant where it said that there was inconsistencies throughout. So I want to go through that. The defendant was, iteration one, two, and three.
Yes.
In iteration, for example, two, did she give more or less details than in iteration one?
Two, she gave more.
Okay. So even though she told you a story for statement one, she told you a bigger, more sensational story, statement two.
Yes. Counsel's testifying. Thanks.
Was the second statement, because you said it was more details, was it more or less sensational than statement one?
More.
Okay. So in that context, is her statement one consistent with her statement two?
No.
Okay. Why not?
Because she's adding more to the story.
Okay. Why does it matter that she's adding more to the story?
Because it helps us come to a better conclusion of what actually did occur, and it's filling in the gaps of the story.
And then statement three was that last recap where she takes a moment and talks to herself, right?
Yes.
So let's process through that. That one, that third statement, was she speaking faster or slower than her two prior statements?
I can't remember.
Okay. Was she kind of rushing through it, or, I mean, what I'm trying to figure out is, did she give more details on statement three than statement two?
I want to say she was rushing through it because she was, I guess, getting annoyed that I kept asking her for the story again and again.
Why did you keep asking her for the story over and over again?
Because sometimes the more that we ask the story again, something clicks to mind and they remember a new detail.
And so you weren't essentially trying to trip her up, you were just trying to get
more information.
That third iteration, was it the same as one and two?
I can't really remember too well.
I guess my point is, in every iteration, she told the story that she was grabbed by the neck, pushed against the wall, and then down. Got up, got a knife, and stabbed Christian.
Yes.
Threw a knife at Christian.
Yes.
But each one of the three accounts were different.
Yes.
How we got there, I guess, is different.
Yeah.
The manner in which the defendant described in her statement being grabbed at the neck, forced against the wall, thrust to the ground, as Mr. Prieto was testifying, did you see any injuries on her that would corroborate any of it?
No.
We talked about the Instagram video ourselves, and Mr. Prezo showed a abrasion on her right shoulder, almost by the bra strap, and press about a circle on her wrist and her arms.
Yes.
In reviewing the Instagram video, did you see those bruises?
Yes.
So they predated the stabbing.
Yes.
There were these neighbors that Ms. Prezo discussed, and they provided the statement that you interviewed. One talked about running around a car, and one talked about an incident at a dog park. Do you recall speaking with Mr. Prezo about those?
Yes.
So let's talk about it. The person that's talked about running around the car, did that person tell you they saw what led to and what happened after that incident?
No.
Did that person understand the context at all or tell you what the context at all was of that?
He assumed that he was trying to pull it out of the car.
Okay. But he didn't tell you beginning, middle, end?
No.
Dog park incident. That individual, did he tell you beginning, middle, end in the context of the incident?
No.
So I ask you those questions in the lead up to the surveillance video for February 21st. An individual that will see part of that video, that would be an individual who would say Christian is striking.
Yes.
Without seeing the defendant walk into the elevator, holding the door, and then attacking him beforehand, they are lacking context?
Yes.
Okay. As part of the search of the apartment, documents with the victim's names were obtained. And I'm bringing that up in the context of Mr. Prezo talking about the lease and who's on the lease. Are you aware that Mr. Lucelli is listed as a permitted occupant of that apartment?
That should be.
I'm asking if he's aware that that is. You can answer.
Yes.
Okay. Is he a permitted person to enter?
Would I be able to look at the...
Yeah, you can look at your if you have the lease. You guys remember your fresh?
Yes.
Was he a permitted person in that apartment?
Christian Abunzali.
Was he?
Yes.
Okay. As part of the documents obtained, as part of the crime scene documents in the scene, at any point in time, did Miami Police locate an electric bill?
Sorry, say that one.
At any point in time, did Miami People, or not Miami, sorry, City of Miami locate an electric bill in the name of Christian Abunzali?
I can't remember.
Okay. If it did, it would be in the crime scene photos?
Yes.
Okay. When you went through, did you locate clothing belonging to a male?
Yes.
Did you locate his belongings?
Yes.
Mr. Prezo was discussing with you the defendant having, quote unquote, kicked him out as a fellow tenant of that unit, which he had been
legally. Objection, Judge, possibly conclusion.
Did she let him back in April 1st?
Yes.
Did she let him back in April 2nd?
Yes.
Did she let him back in April 3rd?
Yes.
Mr. Prieto asked about or discussed with you body worn camera from April 1st incident. So I want to talk to you about that. Have you reviewed that body camera?
I did, but I don't remember too much from it.
That's fair. Do you recall a conversation about a restraining order?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall the defendant making a statement that she needed to get a restraining order before the victim got?
I remember the restraining order part, but that's it.
Okay, I'll just direct the court to that. Do you recall a police officer asking the defendant whether she was under the influence of alcohol or controlled substances?
I don't remember.
Okay, I'll direct the court to that. Do you recall whether the police instructed her as to the circumstances in which of how to obtain a restraining order?
Yes.
And did the defendant state anything that would have justified the issuance of a restraining order?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
Did the defendant say anything that would have justified the restraining order?
I don't remember.
Objection, Judge. That's really the conclusion.
Ms. Prater discussed with you regarding clumps of hair in the Las Vegas incident. So I want to walk through that with you. Do you know whether that was human hair or extensions?
I don't.
Do you know whether the defendant took them off herself or whether they were ripped off?
I don't.
Did, in the video, the defendant's hair appear to be disheveled?
Yes.
And did it appear to be yanked, like missing patches?
No.
So you don't know how the quote-unquote hair clumps of hair got in there?
I don't.
Now, Mr. Prezo discussed with you about blood at the apartment and specifically said the words, that the droplets of blood was consistent with running around the apartment. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay. So since Mr. Prezo asked that, I'm going to redirect you as to that conversation. We discussed ourselves. One, two, and three bloods. Two were clumps. One was where the two guest bedrooms interlock.
Yes.
And the defendant was found cradling the victim. The second was a little bit further into that.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So then the droplets of blood Where was that?
It led from the second pool of blood to the master bedroom and bathroom.
Okay. Through the kitchen?
Yes.
Okay. So because that pool of blood that we discussed was number two, where the defendant was found, or the defendant and the victim were found, that was the conclusion of the drop. Was that the conclusion of the droplet trail?
I'm sorry, can you start over?
Since we know that the victim and defendant were found at that second pool that we discussed.
Yes.
Is your testimony that the droplets, because it was running around the apartment, that was the conclusion of the droplets of blood throughout the apartment?
Yes.
And more specifically, the droplets of blood begin in the kitchen, go to the master bedroom, back through to that second pool?
Yes.
As it pertains to the calls, Mr. Prieto brought up how the defendant called 911. Do you remember that?
How, on which one?
How the defendant called 911 when Christian was dead.
Yes.
Okay. So, and we know that Mrs. Clenny, the defendant's mother, was on the phone with the defendant at the time of the stabbing, specifically the first call.
Yes.
Mr. Prieto made a very long conversation about how you didn't ask about the second call,
Judge.
But we'll get to that. So as it pertains to the stabbing that's having occurred during the first call, that first call was for 6 minutes at 2:43. Is that
yes.
Right? Okay. So Mr. Ombuselli was stabbed somewhere between 2:43 and 2:49.
Yes. Okay.
The defendant's first call after the stabbing, do you recall who it was
to? To her mother.
Okay.
Her mother.
How long was that call?
It was about 7 minutes.
Okay. And then after those 7 minutes passed, did she call 911 or did she call someone else before?
I can't remember.
Okay, I'll direct the court to the records. And then she called 911.
Yes.
So, in a nutshell, she waited 10 minutes before she called 911.
Yes.
Objection, it's facts, not evidence.
I'm eliciting the fact to be in evidence. So, let's discuss your conversation with Mrs. Clenny, and the court has the audio recording of it, but I want to kind of reverse do it. When we talked earlier, I asked you whether you knew anyone else was listening on the call, and you told me no.
Correct.
Did you find out whether someone else was listening on that call?
Yes.
Okay, who was that person?
Your father.
Okay. When the father interjected earlier, you said that the father interjected to say that Mr. Prieto was at the police station.
Yes.
Okay. That was essentially the first time where you became aware of the lawyer and everything else.
Yes.
So this is a little bit checked. This is outside the scope of my cross.
It's literally redirect. So at that point, when you got up and left to go let Mr. Prieto into the police department, that ceased your interview with Mrs. Clement.
Yes.
When you interview witnesses, do you interview them together or separately?
Separately.
Why do you do that?
So they don't share information with each other, and we can get two different understandings of their side of the story.
So not having known that Mr. Clement was on the other line of that phone, you don't know whether he was feeding her answers or not?
Correct.
Separate from that, now knowing that Mr. Clement was listening in on the conversation, did you have any reason to further elicit any testimony from Mrs. Clement?
No.
Now, let's talk about the two calls. Did you ask explicitly about the first call?
Yes.
Okay. Did Ms. Clenny answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. At any point, did she go on a tangent? Sure. While talking about the incident that happened April 3rd, at any point in time, did she stop talking about the April 3rd incident and start talking about the week prior?
Yes.
Okay. At any point in time after talking about how terrible the victim was, did she ever return to the date of incident?
No.
Okay. So, Ms. Clenny not only didn't discuss the second call, but then she redirected.
Yes.
To a separate incident. Okay. Can the defense put on the text messages? The text messages that you showed from Mrs. Clenny? Can you put them on?
Yeah.
So Defense Exhibit C, the screenshot of the text messages, right?
Yes.
And Mr. Graves will discuss with you how 404 is just because it was screenshot at Central Time and so on and so forth. So what time was police call?
I don't remember that time right now.
Would you agree it was before 5?
Yeah.
Okay. So all of these text messages were sent after 7?
Well, I can't really tell.
Well, the first message, 4:04 p.m.
Yeah.
Do you have an iPhone?
Yes.
Okay, so do the messages kind of load reverse chronologically?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you agree that these messages were sent after 7?
Yes.
You've reviewed the body camera in the case, yes?
Yes.
When the officer that first arrives in renders aid, what does he do to Ms. Lenny?
He separates her from the victim.
Is she put in custody?
She's detained.
Okay. Does she handcuff the victim?
Yes.
Okay. So does she have access to her device?
No.
Okay. So when this Mrs. Lenny sends this message, please tell me what is happening, asking the defendant what is happening, the defendant would be unable to reply.
Correct.
So Mrs. Clinton, not knowing what happened and demanding that the defendant call her, then said, even though it was self-defense, don't say anything with the police without getting a lawyer first. That's what's in Defense Exhibit G.
Yes.
But that wasn't the message that you saw, right?
No.
The message you saw was the last one?
Yes.
The last message says, before it cuts off your phone, it is very important, even though it was self-defense, you cannot say anything without an attorney exclamation point. And this is people get in trouble all the time, right?
Yes.
Is that offering the defendant self-defense?
Objection, Judge. Speculation.
So I want to talk to you about why you didn't talk to Mrs. Clenny and Mr. Clenny any further. After your investigation, et cetera, then you briefed the state, and that's where we were at. At some point, did you realize that Mrs. Clenny's statement was kind of inconsistent with everything we talked about?
Yes.
Would her further statement have contributed anything either positively or negatively in your investigation?
No.
Like, why not?
Because she might want to make up any more excuses or change something she says.
I'm asking because defense counsel crossed on the issue, and I'm asking him why he didn't do something in the investigation. So if counsel's going to make the lack of evidence argument, I can do that. Why didn't you interview Mrs. Clinton?
Because I didn't know if they were going to try and make up a new story or change anything from that date of incident.
What about Mr. Clinton? Is it the same answer as those?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Why not Mr. Clinton?
About the same answer.
Neither. You know, on cross, Mr. Prieto asked you about where Mrs. Clenny and Mr. Clenny were in relation to the defendant. And if I recall correctly, you said that they were in Texas and she was here.
Yes.
Were they witnesses to this incident?
No.
So they do not know what happened inside of the park?
Correct.
No further question.
Can I just ask you? Yes. Mm-hmm. I have a few questions.
I actually have one question that I would have wanted to go back to the back again to tiny phone call as it relates to the phone calls that the defendant was making. I'm just still a little bit confused about that. You said that's not evidence. I have a call. Let me just make sure that I'm going to go on correctly. So
sure, 1 second. Detective, I'm gonna ask you to step down. Just a bit through the screen.
And then if you have questions, I'll listen to you.
Yeah.
Does the court want me to put a street to the exhibit, or does my PowerPoint slide? I'll just do it.
Which one?
The one in the box.
No.
I'm showing you what's in evidence as stated to the 16.
It's exhibit 1.
Well, sorry, exhibit 1 on the flash drive, exhibit 16, thank you, within the flash drive. Do you know what all of these columns mean?
No.
Okay, can you tell the court what these columns mean?
Space. This is not the one that's called. This is the phone call it came from. This is the date and time of when it's got
okay. And this is not ahead of time.
Correct.
In April, how many hours ahead of time is that?
Four.
Okay. You mean ahead of the zero run?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So this first column 43/2022/146 that actually if I'm understanding correctly. April 2nd, 2022, 9:46. So I want to direct you to the one that sticks out here is 9:01. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the first 9:01 is is the 17th and 18th slot on the zero. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay. What time is the 9:01?
20:57, which would put it back to 4:57.
16:57. Okay. So immediately before that, the defendant dialed this number 76-472-8232.
Yes.
And that was an 18-minute call.
Yes.
Do you know who that was with?
I do.
Okay. Do you know if that was one very recently? Right before that, there is two separate calls. We see here one is 437 and one is 393.
Yes.
And then the defendant's number called 512-417-3408. Who was that defendant called?
That is
okay. So, again, two calls, one is 393, one is 430. Let's talk about the first one. The first one was at 2043. What time is that? 9:10.
That is 6:43.
Okay, which is what? Okay, so then there was 6 minutes, and then the next call was again to the defendant's mother before 30.
Yes.
Okay. As an aside, do you have multiple calls on that call?
Yes.
So is that would that explain why there's kind of extra calls provided?
Yes.
Right before these two calls, there are four calls. From 512-745-3582 to 214789953. You see that?
Yes.
Okay. Whose number is 214789953?
That was the first
one. Okay. And then, so let's go from oldest to youngest. The first call in that chain, 1955, what time is that local time?
313?
No, sorry. Okay. So 1555, what time is that? Okay. So 1555, 355, at the time, is that the same time when Mr. Mussell is getting the other?
Yes.
So the defendant is calling the victim and he's not answering. The defendant does that one more time, exact same minute.
Do you agree?
Okay. And then, again, 6 minutes later. Okay. And then finally, at 2043, he does get another call this one. Let me tell you this one thing. And 5 or 3 means okay. Just for the record, sorry, I keep interrupting you. What does it mean?
It means that it's a public place for home.
So, just I guess for a minute, and how much time passed between the first call to mom and the defendant call to mom? So 2043 to 2057.
Minutes.
Our best option. Would that be 14 minutes?
14 minutes.
Okay. I believe I have another report. Do you want me to inquire into more about that?
That is
helpful.
So this is important. This will be a key piece of evidence for the state because what they're showing is that between the time that Courtney Clenny was on the phone with her mother and her mother says she heard the fight, the moment of stabbing was on the phone with the mother, that there was at least 14 minutes between that event and calling 911. When presumably Christian was spurting blood all over the apartment from having his aorta clipped by the knife.
Mm-hmm.
skip ahead. All right, now Prieto, defense counsel.
So the 911 call, and just kind of without converting the time, I'm going to use the time here. It's a little easier because Matt has not. Your response is 4 months. Okay? It says 2057, there was a call from 911. Right? And right before that, there was a call to the 512-745-G582, correct?
Yes.
This column here is the number called, correct?
Yes.
And what is this column here, the CPN? Well, let me just phrase it this way. There's two calls prior to the call to 911 to 512-745-3582. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So those are calls to this claims money, right?
Yes.
You have no idea when the seller received that status, correct?
No.
Prior to the call to 911. You don't know if it's during the first phone call or the second phone call, too.
Correct.
So that's a big speculation, then. You say that there was a time lapse of 14 minutes before she called 911, correct?
I don't think so.
Well, let me ask you this. The static could have occurred exactly at 2057, according to these phone records, correct? Right before the 911 call, that's when the static could have occurred, correct?
It could.
You don't know either way, right? No further questions.
I do have a very brief question. This is great, very skilled attorney. He asked a bunch of questions for you.
Say, that's right.
No, I'm redirecting him on the reason. So my question to you is, you don't know obviously because you weren't there for the seven.
Correct.
The reason that you know that seven occurred on the first call is because Mrs. Clyman said she was on the first call.
Objection,
Judge. Thanks. So, Mrs. Clyman discussing the two calls, only discussed the first call.
Yes.
And in the context of the first call, she said that the stabbing occurred. So we know definitively that, according to Mrs. Clown, the stabbing occurred between 2:43 and 2:49.
Yes.
So, worst case scenario is 14 minutes from 2:43 to 2:57. Best case scenario is 8 minutes.
Yes.
So, defendant again, before calling 911, call the mother, contact the building, and then call them.
Yes.
That's all the one.
Right. Thank you both for
excuse.
Yes.
So, Judge, I did reach out to the medical examiner. I spoke to him. I also spoke to your judicial assistant. She believes that you have availability for Thursday afternoon at 2:00.
Okay, so that's really the end of the Arthur hearing on Tuesday, November 15th, 2022. They're talking now about scheduling the medical examiner to come in 2 days later, Thursday, November 17th, 2022. I'll be covering his testimony as well in a different show, maybe two shows. It's also a very long hearing, 3.5 hours long. So I'll have to see how I break that up. But that is all I have to cover here today. So you mostly heard the cross-examination by defense counsel Frank Pietro of lead detective, good heavens. Now I'm blanking on his name, been listening to him all day. Brasino, lead detective Brasino. And, trying to punch holes in the state's narrative of the case for the purposes of this Arthur hearing. And also because this is how the detective can be expected to testify when we finally get to Courtney Clenny's actual trial. All right, folks, with that done, I am going to wrap up. I'll just remind all of you that if you carry a gun so you're hard to kill, that's why I carry a gun, so I'm hard to kill, so my family is hard to kill, then you also owe it to yourself and your family to make sure you know the law so you're hard to convict as well. Until next time, I remain Attorney Andrew Branca for the Law of Self-Defense. Stay safe.